Ciao Paolo.
Ciao Anand. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. It's a pleasure to have you here today.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Pleasure for me as well.
How are you?
Fine. Fine.
Okay. So today my guest is Paolo Todd. He's Professor Emeritus of OR in the Department of Electrical and Information Engineering at University of Bologna. His research interests include OR and mathematical programming methodologies, in particular, the design and implementation of exact and heuristic algorithms for combinatorial and graph theory problems and their application to real-world transportation, logistics, loading, routing, crew management, and railway optimization problems. He's author or co-author of more than 190 papers published in international journals and of the book Knapsack Problems, Algorithms, and Computer Implementations, and also of the book The Vehicle Routing Problem. From 1995 to 1996, he was president of Euro. From 2001 to 2003, he was president of iForce. He received several international awards, among which the Euro Gold Medal in 1998, the Robert Herman Lifetime Achievement Award in Transportation Science in 2005, the INFORMS Fellowship in 2016, the Euro Distinguished Service Award in 2019, and the iForce Fellowship in 2020. In May 2003, the University of Montreal conferred him a doctorate honoris causa in OR. Paolo supervised more than 200 master theses, 25 PhD students from 6 different countries, and 16 postdocs. Paolo, you were a legend in our field. It's such an honor to have you here. Thank you so much for accepting the invitation.
Thank you very much, Anand. It's an honor for me to be included in this list of so prestigious persons.
It's a pleasure, as I said. So, Paolo, you were born in 1941. Where exactly?
I was born in Zara, Italy, which is on the Dalmatian, the region of Dalmatia, on the eastern coast of the Adriatic Sea. Zara was founded by the Roman in 48 BC. Then it was in the Republic of Venice. But from the years 1922 to 1938, it was a city of the Kingdom of Italy. And I was born there in this period. So I was born in Italy and started my life in Italy. Later, before 1922, Zara was a city of the Austrian-Hungarian Empire. While after 1947, it was a city first of the Yugoslavian Republic and currently of the Croatian Republic. And the name is now no more Zara, but Zadar. This is about my city.
Okay. Very interesting. So at that time it was Italy, but nowadays it's part of Croatia.
Currently it's Croatia. Mm-hmm.
So Paolo, your surname, Todd, does not sound Italian. What is the actual origin?
Yes, my ancestor moved from Hungary to Dalmatia at the beginning of the 19th century, in 1815 about. And they remained there.
Mm-hmm. And did you grow up in Zara?
No, I left Zara in 1943 because of the frequent bombings of the city. So we moved to Fano, which is a city on the western coast of the Adriatic Sea, and I remained here.
Okay.
For a while.
Right.
And I never returned to Zara. I never returned to my birth city.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what did your father do for a living?
My father was an engineer, whose name is Eugenio, was an officer of Italian army. He was a prisoner of war in a French camp in Algeria from March 1943 to June 1945. Then he returned to Italy and he joined my family.
Well, so he was arrested during the Second World War and you were a little kid. So you literally did not see him for a couple of years.
Yes, so I have no memory at all of Zara because I left Zara with, I had less than 2 years. So I have no memories.
Right, right. Zara. And what about your mother? What did she do?
My father was a housewife. So the name is Mariangela and this was a housewife.
Uh-huh. And are you an only child?
No, I have two brothers older than me. Lucio, who died in 2017, was an high court magistrate and a member of Italian Senate. And the other brother, Silvio, who was an official of the army, of Italian army, and he retired with the rank of major general.
Ah, okay. So one of your brothers was a politician.
Yes, it was magistrate, but for a period, it was also a politician.
Okay. How was the atmosphere in Italy after the war? Do you have any recollections?
Yes, in my memory, the people in Italy had the great will to start again. All person and was waiting for a future, and they were confident that the future will be much better. And also they worked a lot to improve the life conditions of the country. So it was a good period from this point of view. The life was not so rich as later, of course, but the people were all involved in this improvement of the situation.
I see. And how was life in Fano in those days?
It was a nice period for me. I was young, of course, so I attended the primary school and part of a secondary school. Fano is a city on the coast, so during the summer I went to the beach, I played with my friends, and I swam in the sea. And this is a will which remained for me. Whenever I can swim in the sea, I do it. Oh. In every position, even if the sea, the water is cold, I enter the sea because I like to swim in the sea.
So you had a good period there in Fano, I mean, just after the war, so things were improving, and I mean, the idea of rebuilding the country and at the same time enjoying life, it should have been really, really great.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And when did you leave Fano?
I left Fano in 1954. My father was moved to Modena at the military academy of the Italian army. And so we moved to Modena. Modena is a city about 40 kilometers northwest of Bologna. And it's the city where the sports cars, Ferrari and Maserati, are built. So it's also, Modena is the city of the tenor Luciano Pavarotti, is from Modena, so it's a small city, but an ancient city, a small city, but it was nice to live there.
Ah, sure. And in addition to school, how did you keep yourself busy in those days in Modena?
Yes, I was a Boy Scout for a long period, from the age of 9 years to the age of 16 years. In addition, I played rugby as a wing three-quarter, in the team of CUS Modena, it was the team of the city of Modena, which played in the second division in Italy. So I was not a very good player, so no problem. I stopped to play during the second year of the university since I had a luxation to my right shoulder, and so I stopped to play rugby.
Wow, but still, it's very impressive. You were involved to that extent in rugby. And since we're talking about sports, which soccer team do you support in Italy?
I am a fan of Internazionale of Milano, Inter. Inter. And with my son Federico, we had a season ticket for the matches of Inter. So every 2 weeks we went by car to Milano at the Stadium San Siro to watch at the matches of Inter. We stopped when my son Federico got married, because at the time his wife was not so glad to have Federico going out every 2 weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. But still, it's you were quite consistent in doing that. So you were really a great supporter of Internazionale.
Yes, but yes, a real fan of the team.
Great. So. And what type of music did you use to listen back then?
I like both opera, classical music, but also songs. So both Italian singers like Adriano Celentano or Domenico Modugno, but also at the time when I was young, also US singers like Pat Boone, Elvis Presley, Roy Orbison, Dean Martin, and so on.
Wow, okay, nice. Yeah, I like Roy Orbison, by the way, yeah. And Paolo, the Italian cinema was flourishing at a time with directors like Federico Fellini, Vittorio De Sica, and Luchino Visconti. I myself watched several movies from that era, including, for example, Ladri di Bicicletta, Rocco e I Suoi Fratelli. How about you? Do you have any favorites?
Yes, at that period, I liked the movie Roma Città Aperta from Renzo Rossellini, or from Vittorio De Sica, Miracolo a Milano, Umberto D. There was very nice movies of that time.
Ah, okay. And did you have the chance to travel abroad during your teenage years?
Yes, in the year 1958, I hitchhiked with a friend of mine, and we visited Germany, the Netherlands, Belgium, England, Scotland, France, and then we returned to home. While in the following year, in 1959, again, with a friend of mine, we hitchhiked again, and we went to, again, Germany, Denmark, Sweden, and returned. So for 2 years, we stayed about 1 month abroad with hitchhiking.
Wow, and in 1958, you said you went to Belgium?
Yes,
did you go to Brussels?
Brussels, and at that time the Atomium was built for the international fair, and so we visited the Atomium in Brussels.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to ask you. And you mentioned hitchhiking, but I mean, so you go to the like the highway and just
Not in the highway. The highway is forbidden and is also useless, completely useless to try to stop the cars. So in the secondary roads, not inside the city, so just on the border of the city, and we try to do our hitchhiking, but not always it was a good period. So sometimes we remained on the road for hours before to be taken from someone. But generally, it was possible to move, and we were able to reach very far places.
Taking, you know, lifts and rides.
Yes,
incredible.
In that period, in the 50s, it was usual for young people, boys and girls, to use this technique for moving from a city to another city. It was not so strange as now. Currently, it is difficult to find people on the road asking for each item. But at the period, we had a file of persons, so we had to choose a good position, not a beginning, because it is not fair for the other people. So we had to go, if other people were asking for a passage, we had to go at the last position.
So there was a line.
Long time, so what?
Okay, yeah. It should have been a real adventure for you guys in those days. Unfortunately, these type of things are not really common, as you said, nowadays. But it's good to hear these stories. And what about high school? Did you do well?
I was a good student. I had no problem at all. I enjoyed the Ultravis period of my life. It was a nice period. And so it was fine.
And why did you choose to study engineering?
I liked and continue to like mathematics. And I also obtained good scores at the school. And I was wishing to do something from a practical point of view. So I chose engineering.
Did you move to Bologna right away?
Yes. For the first 2 years of the university, I remained in Modena. I followed a course in mathematics, physics, and so on, together with the students of mathematics and physics. But after the first 2 years, I moved to Bologna, and I attended the courses of the electronic engineer courses at the University of Bologna.
Right. Did you have any art classes in Modena or Bologna?
At those times, neither Modena nor Bologna had courses in operation research. So I have no courses in operation research during my university.
Uh-huh. So you finished your studies in early 1966, and you got an equivalent to a master's degree, right?
Yes, I had my final examination in February 1966, after 5 years of course, and this is equivalent to a master degree, and I obtained a degree in electronic engineering.
Ah, okay. And what was the topic of your dissertation?
I designed and implemented an algorithm based on dynamic programming technique for the optimization on hydroelectric power station. So I started my activity with an optimization problem on which I applied dynamic programming technique. So.
But you mentioned you didn't have R classes. And how did you learn about dynamic programming?
Yes, we had no course on operational research, and so neither on dynamic programming. So I read the papers of Richard Bellman, of course, and also other papers with application of dynamic programming to real-world problems. And then I was able to implement and to design to implement my algorithm.
Uh-huh. You obviously had to write a computer program to run the tests. Did you have coding classes, or you had to learn by yourself?
Yes, I have a coding class in the last year of my course, and I was able to code in Fortran.
Using punch cards and...
Yes, I had to use punch card boxes with a punch card. It was, of course, a problem, because if you put error, you have something, and the cards are not in the right order, you have to spend a lot of time to obtain the original code. So uh-huh. It was not easy to work with punched cards.
And in those days, things were way more challenging when it came to writing efficient computer programs, as memory, for example, was very limited.
Yes, we had really several problems in implementing our algorithm. As you said, we had problems with concerning the memory requirement of the algorithms. For a period, we at the engineering school of Bologna, we had a computer, the CDC 6600, which was a very good computer for that time, but it had a limited memory. At most 60,000 words can be stored. So we had problem, for example, when we had to store a matrix with 200 rows and 200 columns. So only small problems can be solved. And in addition, we had no our own computer. So we had to use the computer of the center, of the computing center of the School of Engineering. So we had to take our boxes with a punched card to a computer center, and then we have to wait for the execution of the program, of the codes. And the problem was that if we perform a small error, let us say a comma put in the wrong position, we have to enter again to correct, to punch again our cards, to re-enter, and so we spend hours, sometimes 5-6 hours, half a day, waiting for the results of our attempt. Yes, it was not easy. Yes, of course, we tried to be as careful as possible in preparing our codes so as to avoid these small errors, but any case, it was not so easy to have in a short time the results of the code.
Yeah, it's incredible to hear these experiences, as people nowadays may take things for granted, especially the youngsters. You know, it's quite convenient to code and test programs, and you don't even have to care about memory or the number of words you can store.
Yes.
So yeah. You guys were really brave at the time. And Paul, until when did you keep coding?
I stopped to code at the beginning of the years 2000, when we started to code in C and no more in Fortran. So I stopped with my coding, and my younger collaborators coded the algorithms.
Wow, so you remained coding throughout the 70s,
yes,
80s,
yes.
And 90s.
Yes,
so,
yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because I work with, let's say, Silvano Marcello, Daniele Vigo, Matteo Fischetti, and we both coded. So one part was coded by me, the other part from my co-authors. But we have no PhD student, for example, who can code for us. So in the last year, of course, I don't code anymore, and the PhD student code the others. Uh-huh.
Yeah, but still, it's amazing that you spent all these years coding, right? One would not expect, you were, super busy with, many commitments and attributions, but still you managed to find the time,
yes,
to code and,
yes,
to contribute
yes,
at that level in the research work. So that's
yes,
incredible, Paolo. And what did you do after graduating?
My master thesis supervisor, Remo Rossi, who was a professor in computer science, asked me to remain at the university to perform research and to help him for the courses in computer science. So he had a grant from the Ministry of Public Education, and I started my research in this way.
Yeah, I have to ask you this. Did you always have an office, or you stayed at a corridor in the beginning, like many of your students?
Yes. At the beginning of my career, of course, I had not an office for me. I shared a box with some colleagues of mine. I had a single office only when I was appointed as full professor, so in 1983. And I know that my student, PhD students, young collaborator, worked in a corridor in our department. They were able to have a common office only when we were appointed as assistant professors, so they have a permanent position. Before, they stayed on the corridor. There is only a barrier, a wooden barrier, to separate them from the people passing through the corridors.
Yeah, and they all remember very fondly about that experience working in a corridor. And what was your impression to see, these great students there, just, and with people passing by and a bit of chaos? What was your impression?
First of all, it was the only way to give the PhD student a position where we can work, we can use their computers. They are close together, they are close to my office, so I went often to speak with them, or I called them in my office and we spoke in my office. So I think it was not so relaxing, the situation, but I think they worked well, at least. Looking at the results they obtained, we were not in a very bad situation.
Yeah, absolutely.
We were able to work well, okay, by looking at the results.
Yeah. I remember Andrea Lodi saying that now he can work in the airport, with all the distractions.
Yes.
Yeah, so they're not only trained in terms of research, they're trained also to work under, let's say, very distracting situations.
Yes.
That's nice. And there was no PhD program at the time, correct?
Yes, it's correct. You are right. In the Italian university, we started to have PhD courses only in the year 1983. So, for example, I had no PhD title. Also, Silvano Martello has no PhD title. I had a honorary PhD title in operation research from the University of Montreal in 2003, but this is the only PhD degree I have. So,
yes.
Mm-hmm. And the first PhD student of mine was Matteo Fischetti.
We're going to talk about that later. Yes. And what did you study in the years that follow?
I started working on discrete event numerical simulation and to application of numerical simulation to production and traffic systems. In our courses at the University of Bologna in the School of Engineering, we still have a part of the class in operational research dealing with numerical simulation. So we still teach part for a few hours numerical simulation.
And which language, which simulation language you used?
Sanskrit and Simula.
Okay. You're talking about simulation. I recently have collaborated with Malno Jori, that you know well, on the topic with a couple of his PhD students. So, I haven't worked a lot on simulation, but I have some experience. I thought across too. It's an interesting topic, especially, you know, for solving practical problems. So, Paolo, plenty of things happened in your life and professional career in those years. You got married in 1967. The next year, you became a faculty member. In 1972, you became officially assistant professor. And in 1975, you were appointed associate professor. And almost no research on optimization up to that point. So a question I've been wanting to ask you for a long time is, how did combinatorial optimization arrive in Bologna?
Yes. Giorgio Cappanetto, a colleague of mine who is just a few years older than me, attended a course in combinatorial optimization in Paris in the year 1974. When he returned, he was very glad of this course and he introduces me to the two combinatorial optimization problems, the assignment problem and the asymmetric traveling salesman problem, asymmetric TSP. So we started with work, Giorgio Carpanetta and myself, on these two problems, assignment problem and asymmetric TSP.
So in 1974, it's when combinatorial optimization was introduced to you guys in Bologna, and it came through Giorgio Carpanetto.
Yes. Also in this school in Paris, Giorgio Carpanetto met Nikos Christofidis from the Imperial College in London. He was impressed from his quality. Because of this, later we become friends, but we will return to this point later.
Did AIRO, the Italian Society of Operation Research, already exist at the time?
AIRO was founded in 1961, but at the beginning, all the members of AIRO were from industry. No person from university or academic centers was a member of AIRO. People in the academic world started to become member of AIRO at the end of the 70s. But the problem is that now, unfortunately, the reverse is happening. That is, the majority of the person in AIRO, in our association, is from the academy, and only few persons are from the industry. And this is, of course, is a pity, because we need to be a strong contact with person tackling real world problems. This is the current situation.
Yeah, ideally, one should have a balance, right? So AIRO was there since the early 60s. So operations research was in Italy. It took a while to involve the academia, but up to the point that it involved too much. So people from industry, they were not attending conferences as much as they used to do. You were president of AIRO for several years, right? In the 80s.
Yes. I was first a member of the committee of AIRO from the 1979, and then I was also president of AIRO for 7 years in the 80s. And it was a nice period. I continued to attend, of course, all the conference of AIRO during all these years, and I have very good friends inside this association.
And when did Silvano Martello come into the picture?
Silvano obtained his master's degree in electronic engineering in the year 1973. Then he went for the military service, and when he returned in 1974, he entered our group with a grant from the University of Bologna. He worked, his master thesis was on a survey on nonlinear programming algorithms. So nothing to do with combinatorial optimization.
Okay.
It was before 1974, so we did not deal with combinatorial optimization at that time.
Right. And was it around that time that you started studying the knapsack problems?
Yes, I started to work on the knapsack problem in 1975. I presented a reduction algorithm for the knapsack problem and at the OSA team's joint meeting in Miami in the year 1976. Then with Silvano, we started to work on the knapsack problem in 1976. And at the second annual conference of Euro, which was held in Stockholm in December 1976, we presented the first results of our research on the upper bound and the branch and bound algorithm for the 0-1 knapsack problem, which was later published in the European Journal of Operational Research.
You mentioned that conference in Miami.
Yes.
Was it the first time you attended an international OR conference?
Yes, that was the first time I attended an international conference. Then I attended other conference, and I started to attend other conference, and I tried to continue to attend international conference, but that was the first time I attended an international conference.
Do you have any memories of that conference, the travel and all that?
Very new world for me. And so I was in the state earlier for other reasons. I spent about 3 months in Phoenix, in Arizona, for working at General Electric within the grant I had with the University of Bologna. But that in Miami was the first meeting I attended.
Wow. During the late 60s and early 70s, you were not publishing your work in international journals, right?
Yes, you're right. We only publish our research results in Italian journals on electronic engineering. And this was the normal, the standard behavior of the researchers in the fields of mathematics and engineering and then in operational research. We did not try to publish, to submit papers to international journal. We submit the papers to Italian journal, and we had no journal in operational research at that time. Only at the end of the 70s, we started to submit and to be able to publish papers in international journal. Only at the end of the 70s.
You published your work on the asymmetric TSP in 1980 in Management Science, but that was not your first international paper, correct?
Yes. My first international paper, co-authored with Silvano, was published in 1977 by EJO, the European Journal of Operational Research, and was our paper on the knapsack problem. Then I published with Silvano other papers on knapsack problem, with Giorgio Carpanetto some papers on assignment problem and something on the vehicle routing problem. But from 1980, I started to publish more frequently in international journals.
Right. So that first paper was a branch and bound algorithm for the knapsack problem.
Yes.
You also proposed a dynamic programming algorithm for the knapsack problem, and you published the resulting paper in 1980. in a journal called Computing and as a sole author.
Yes, I worked alone on the dynamic probing algorithm for the 0-1 NAPSAC problem, and I presented the first version of the algorithm and the team also meeting in San Francisco in 1977. The final version of this algorithm was published only in 1980. And so this is the results.
And how did you start working on the vehicle routing problem?
This is a long story. So, in the years 1973-1975, I worked with Aristide Mingozzi, who was at that time an employee of Sogesta. Sogesta was a company of Eni, Internazionale Idrocarburi, the national company for a petrol company, and was like a private university of Eni, of Eni. So, Aristide was working there, and we worked on simulation problems. And at the given time, Eni asked us for developing an algorithm for the distribution of petrol products from a central depot to a set of gas stations. That is, in other words, we asked for a heuristic algorithm for the vehicle routing problem. So we started to work on this subject, and by considering the fact that Giorgio Carpanetto knew Nikos Christofidis in Paris a few years before, we asked Nikos Christofidis to come to Sogesta to work with us on the vehicle routing problem. In this way, we started to work on vehicle routing problem with Aristide Mingozzi and Nikos Christofidis. Aristide Mingozzi then entered the university, he became a full professor at the University of Bologna, professor of operational research at the University of Bologna. At the time, he was an employee in this company.
Yeah, and that company was in Urbino, right?
Urbino is an ancient city close to Fano, not 40 kilometers from Fano.
And you organized a summer school in combinatorial optimization in 1977. And later in 1979, you co-authored one of the very first books on the topic, correct?
Yes, this is true. Are you able to look at it?
Yeah.
Okay, so this was a book edited by with Nikos Christofidis, Aristide Mingozzi, and Claudio Sandi from IBM. And it contains many chapters on well-known researchers at the time. I can mention some of them. First of all, Egon Balasch, then we have Robert Ganfilke, Peter Hammer, Francesco Maffioli from Milano, Manfred Padberg, Jan Karen Lenstra, Alexander Rinnoi-Kahn, Franco Giannessi, and others. So it was a good school with very high level speakers.
Yeah, and it's like a constellation of stars there.
A good experience for me because I enter in contact with so many good researchers, and I started a friendship with them at the time.
Well, so organizing that school was a game changer for you. It's a very important event, and yeah, very nice.
Yes.
Paulo, you became full professor in 1980, but actually you moved to Florence, to Firenze, before returning to Bologna only in 1983, right?
Yes. In 1980, I won a competition for a position of full professor in automatic control, not in operational research, but in automatic control at the School of Engineering of the University of Florence. I remained there for 3 years, and then in 1983, I returned to Bologna as full professor in operational research. Uh-huh. And I remained there until my retirement.
So it was really a short period. But then you managed to find a way to return.
Yeah, to return home. Yes, this is the usual behavior of Italian professors. They try to remain in the same university for a long period.
Right.
Not as in the States. So.
Yeah.
The attitude is to come back, to return, to go, and then return as soon as possible.
Right. Yeah, I did the same myself. I left to study, and then. Well, when I had the chance, I returned to my hometown. So I completely understand what you're saying. And So you mentioned a lot of important names that took part of the school, and you became close with one of the professors that also participated in the book. I'm talking about Egon Balázs. So you visited him in 1982 and 1987 in Carnegie Mellon. How yes. was the experience of working with him?
It was a fantastic period. Egon Balázs is a legendary person. And he's very well known in the combinatorial optimization area. He was one of the first researchers in the world to publish paper in this area. And he continued to be active for several decades. He was always very collaborative with me, and we always remain good friends. And during my visiting period with at Carnegie Mellon University, we wrote two papers, two joint papers. One chapter on the branch and bound algorithm for the TSP on the book on the 37 problem edited by Gene Lawler, Jan-Carlo Lestra, Alexander Rinoy-Kahn, and David Smoys, and the paper on a parallel implementation of the algorithm for the assignment problem published in the Journal of ACM. It's the only paper of mine dealing with a parallel algorithm, a real parallel algorithm, which tried to exploit the parallelism by looking for in parallel to at different short augmenting path for the solution of the assignment problem. It was a real parallel algorithm.
Excellent. You know that I'm familiar with that work on the branch and bound algorithms for the TSP, because that's one of the very few works on the topic. I mean, usually we train our students to code exact algorithms for simple combinatorial optimization problems starting with a TSP. And the first implementation is the combinatorial branch and bound algorithm using the assigner relaxation. And then they do it the branch and bound algorithm, but this time using a 1-3 relaxation implemented using Lagrangian relaxation. That PDF I share with them is that of yours that you did in the 70s. And it's probably written in a typewriter and then later scanned. So yes. I know that work, actually.
Thank you, Anand.
Yeah. So, Paulo, I noticed that around that time, most of your work was over combinatorial relaxations rather than linear relaxations, correct?
Yes, you're right. In general, when I take the combinatorial optimization problem, which can be modeled as an integer linear program or a mixed integer linear problem, a MILP model, I prefer to obtain good relaxations of a considered problem by introducing relaxation obtained by methods consisting in the removal of constraints or through surrogate or Lagrangian methods, leading, of course, to well-structured relaxed problem, which can be solved on average within short computing time. This is instead of using the continual relaxation, which for this type of models lead to linear programming models, which are easily solved by the current LP solver. Are polynomial problem which can be solved also in a very effective way from a practical point of view. In the first year of my career, this choice depended also on the low effectiveness of available LP solvers. This, of course, is no more the case in the current times, when it seems that the only available relaxation for a MILP model is the LP relaxation, with the possibility of addition of valid inequalities, as done by the most effective MILP solvers. But for some problems, it can also be possible to obtain very good relaxations by means of different methods, like, for example, surrogate or Lagrangian methods, even if they lead to non-polynomial relaxed problems. For instance, for a multiple NAFSA problem, it is possible to obtain good surrogate and Lagrangian relaxation, which require the optimal solution of one or more NAFSA problems, since each NAFSA problem can be solved on average in very short computing time. So sometimes it's a good technique to use relaxed problems which are not always polynomial. If the Laxer program polynomial, like for example, the Simon problem, the shorter spanning tree, the shorter spanning arborescence, they are very good relaxation for the symmetric or asymmetric traveling size of the problem. It can be solved in polynomial time by means of very effective codes. But even if you obtain a relaxed problem which leads to an NP-hard problem, sometimes it's a good technique to use this, because we know that in the class of NP-hard problems, there are problems which are more easily to be solved than other problems. For example, the single NAPSA problem, which is weakly NP-hard, is much simpler to be solved than multiple NAPSA problem or other problems based on NAPSA with additional constraints. Or, for example, the TSP, which is NP-hard, strongly NP-hard, and so it could require a large computing time, but on average, it can be solved very easily in very short computing time. The symmetric TSP can be solved in reasonable computing time with up to 100,000 of vertices. Also, the asymmetric TSP can be solved easily with a few thousand vertices. And this relaxed problem leading to TSP, symmetric or asymmetric TSP, can be considered as good bound, for example, for the vehicle routing problem, for which, for each route, apply this technique in order to find the best solution.
Yeah, thanks very much for this short lecture. The thing is, you guys were somewhat bounded by the resources available in those days. And yes. Like, there were no solvers largely available for, you know, solving the linear relaxation that is quite common, as you said, nowadays. So you had to resort to alternative techniques, and then that's why you ended up devising your exact algorithms over combinatorial relaxations, right? And then you take those problems, and you mentioned that they can be polynomial, and so you have efficient algorithms to solve them. But at times, even if the relaxation leads to a weakly NP-hard problem where you can use dynamic programming, or even to other NP-hard problems like the TSP, in which you have a very effective tools and algorithms and packages available now to solve them in reasonable computing time. So I understand your point. It's not only a matter of just choice or taste. It's also a matter of necessity, right? That's what was actually possible to be done in those days when you look at computer resources available at that time, right?
Yes.
So you mentioned that you started supervising PhD students in 1983. That's also the year that you returned to Bologna. I was also born in that year, incidentally.
Yes.
And you started off on the right foot. You mentioned, right? Your first PhD student was Matteo Fischetti.
Yes.
And,
yes.
You know,
yes.
Of course, is very well known in our community.
Yes.
And yes. I mean, how was it?
Yes. Indeed, my first PhD student was Matteo Fischetti. It was in the first year in which the Italian University started the PhD course. So I was lucky to have a so good candidate for the first year of PhD students. Matteo worked on models and algorithms for routing and scheduling problems. And he won the first prize in the competition of the Transportation Science section of Operational Research Society of America, later merged with Management Science and currently Informs, in the year 1987, when he finished the PhD courses. And that was the first time the prize of Informs was conferred to a PhD thesis developed outside the United States. Up to that time, all the PhD thesis which we obtained the prize were developed not only by US students, but students working in the US university. That was the first time a PhD student from abroad, working in Italian university in this case, won a competition of Informs, of ORSA, of management science, and so on. So So go to France.
Wow, this very impressive.
It was the beginning of a career of Matteo Fischetti.
Uh-huh. That's very interesting. Like, you guys were really entering this different territory and proving that we're able to do very good work and being recognized in different years. And that's nice. Paolo, you have a long list of fantastic Italian PhD students, namely Daniele Vigo, Alberto Caprara, Andrea Lodi, Michele Monaci, Enrico Malaguti, Valentina Cacchiani, Laura Galli, Andrea Tramontani, Fabio Furini, Carlo Alfredo Preziani, and Roberto Roberti. We can also include Juan José Salazar González, who's not Italian, but deserves to be in the list. How does it feel to have influenced multiple generations of highly accomplished optimizers?
Yes. Once Egon Balas said to me, "You should be really proud of your students." He was right. I'm proud of them, and I was really lucky to have such a large number of outstanding students. I would have never reached the result I obtained without their impressive collaboration. So I was really happy to have this long list of exceptional students. It was a very particular period in my life, and I think also in their life, to be together, to have a possibility to work together and to obtain very good results.
Yeah, and you guys were making history because the level of the work that were developed in those years was just incredible, and it shaped our field in a way, right? Mm. They had tremendous influence in what's being now used in solvers, for example, and also in other techniques, like even heuristics. So you should actually be really, really proud of what you accomplished alongside Silvano, right? It was a fantastic achievement for sure. And it's important to mention that you later supervised many students from South America, right?
Yes, this is true. Yes. Yes, in the years from 2005 to 2008, I was involved in a European Union project called ALFA concerning the exchange of PhD students from Latin America and Europe. So several PhD students from Brazil and Chile came to Bologna. Later, other PhD students came to Bologna with national grants. I can mention them. Is Albert Fernandez Muritiba from Brazil, Rosa Medina Duran from Chile, Victor Vera from Chile, Rodrigo Linfarti, John Wilmer Escobar from Colombia, Eduardo Alvarez Miranda, Carlos Contreras Bolton, Carlos Rey, and currently Alan Osorio. We have to finish his PhD course next year. So these are all my Latin American students. I was happy with them. I think also they were happy with me, and recently at the IFORS conference in Santiago in last July, we had a meeting. We went all together to a dinner, and it was very nice to meet them again and to have all these friends, young friends, with me. It was really a fantastic dinner and a fantastic time. Yes, very happy to have these students, both the Italian one and the Latin American ones.
Yeah,
extraordinary thing.
Yeah, right. And other students, they did not do the entire PhD with you, but they visited you for a period, like Luis Miguel Escobar Falcón from Colombia, for example, is my friend.
Yes.
And other people, right? They also went there.
Yes.
As a visiting
student. Also, for a short period, I had, for example, David Pissinger.
Yeah.
From University of Copenhagen, Jean-François Cordeau, Université de Montréal. Then you have David Alcaide from Università de la Laguna. And we have Juan José Miranda Bront from Università de Buenos Aires in Argentina. So, and we have Corinne Ferremans from ULB in Brussels, working with Martin Labbé, but she was for a period with us, and other people, other person, young person, mm-hmm. coming to Bologna for short periods to work with us.
Yes. Yeah, you mentioned these names from South America. I met some of them at the iForce conference too, a couple of months ago in Chile. And you seem to have a real fan base around there. They showed me this group, like Professor Todd fans, or something like that. And as Gustavo was particularly very excited.
Yes, he was also in Bologna for a short period.
Yeah, and Rosa and Rodrigo Linfatti. So I met them. They're really nice, and they seem really, really enthusiastic to have you around, and they have a tremendous respect for you. So, I witnessed that. Right. So I also want to comment one thing, Paulo. In 2011, when I met you for the first time, that was something important in my early career, because I was there presenting this work to a lot of important members of the VRP community worldwide. And after my presentation, you came, with this pen drive and asked me for a copy of my slides. And I was like speechless, and because I could recognize you, of course. And I was like, wow, this legend took interest in my work. And you just came there, very humble, soft-spoken, and said, could you please share your slides? And I was really, really happy. And that was highly influential because, I mean, you reached this stage in your career. You didn't have to prove anything else. But still, you were very caring, very gentle, very generous, very respectful, regardless of your position. Be supportive. And these little gestures here and there, they give us a lot of motivation to keep on working. I remember also Grazia Speranza made me a couple of questions. So you Italians are really nice, I should say, when I was presenting. So I would like to thank you for that,
Thank you for your so nice words. Thank you, Anand.
Yeah, that's an honor. So Paulo, what motivated you and Silvano to write a book on knapsack problems?
Yes. In the period from 1976 to 1988, we worked on several knapsack and extension knapsack problems. For example, the bounded knapsack problem, the subset sum problem, the change-making problem, the multiple knapsack problem, the generalized assignment problem, the beam packing, and so on. So we thought to write a book on all these problems. We contacted Wiley, and they accepted our proposal, so we started to write our book, and we finished in 1990. So it was a good experience.
Yeah. And what's the story behind the famous book on the vehicle routing problem that you co-edited with Daniele Vigo?
Yes. For the first version of the book, which was published by SIIM in 2002, we tried to involve the researchers who gave the most important contribution in the definition of the mathematical model and the design of the Xaft heuristic algorithm for the VRP and for the main variant, and I think we succeeded in this. While for the second version of the model, we had a meeting in Sitges, close to Barcelona, during a route conference with of course, Daniele, Vigo, Gilbert Laporte, and Angel Corberan. So we decided to write a book considering both the vehicle routing problem and the arc routing problem. And we considered the people who could be involved, the subject to be considered. And we arrived at the decision that we have enough material to edit two different books. So we proposed SIM to edit two different books, one edited by me and Daniele on the vehicle routing problem, and one edited by Gilbert and Angel on the arc routing problem. So this is two parallel books which appeared about the same time in 2014 on two parallel problems, and vehicle routing and arc routing. And it was, again, we tried to involve people who were not, we were involved also in the previous version of the book, but we tried to introduce new person, new problems, new techniques. Yeah. And we have a problem for this, because we asked Eduardo Ochoa and Marcus Poggi to write a paper on the exact algorithms for the capacitated vehicle routing problem, the basic vehicle routing problem. And they were so nice, they wrote the paper, the chapter, they included a sketch of their algorithm and a part of the computational results. But they had, later they had a problem. Why? Because when they submitted their complete paper with all the details of the algorithms, of the complete computational experiments, some reviewers of the journal said, but this is not a new research, this has been already published in the book. So the journal rejected the paper by Eduardo and Marcus. But fortunately, they were able to publish the paper in Mathematical Programming Computation, and so the paper appeared. But a first step, I don't mention the journal, but the paper was rejected only because some sketch of it and a part of the computational result appeared in our book. So with Daniele, we felt to be in some way guilty of this rejection. But this was the case, a strange case, but fortunately, they arrived at the end to publish a very exciting paper on a high-level journal.
Yeah, wow. I mean, I actually, the conference that I met you and that I just commented that you approached me and so on was just the very same conference that you guys decided to organize the book. Yes. There in Spain. Since I was working with Eduardo Ochoa, he was my PhD co-advisor, I was more or less familiar with what was going on at that time too. So yeah. I was never involved in any of these things, but I was kind of following what was going on. And one thing this I remember when I visited Maria Batarra in yes. Southampton, she was working there. So yes. She co-authored one book chapter of that book with Jean-François Cordeau and with Manuel Iori. And I helped her in organizing a part of that chapter regarding pickup and delivery problems related to goods. That is the simultaneous pickup and delivery, mixed pickup and delivery, and so on. So since I had worked a lot on those problems, I had discussions with Maria, and then I saw her editing the book. I know that book chapter there. So it's nice. Yeah, and this book has a great value for our community, both editions, right? The one in 2002 and the other one in 2014. So yeah, great contributions. Paulo, from 1988 to 1995, you were president of AIRO, that is the Italian Oral Society. Then from 1995 to 1996, you were president of EURO. And finally, from 2001 to 2003, you were president of IFORS. I know you have nice anecdotes involving the latter. Why don't you tell me a couple of them?
Okay, so in July 1996, at the Triennial IFORS Conference in Vancouver, I was in the same hotel as Peter Bell, who was elected president of IFORS during that conference for the period from January 1998 to December 2000. We were in the same hotel, and one day in the elevator, I met Peter, and Peter asked me, do you like to be the chairman of a program committee of the next IFORS Triennial Conference, which will be held in Beijing in 1999? And I said yes. And so I was appointed as chair of the program committee of this conference. Also, I was invited to go to Beijing to find an appropriate location for the conference, because when the administrative committee of IFORS went to Beijing to look for a good positions, they did not find a good one. Peter Bell said to me, we have only seen locations which are in the middle of nowhere. It is necessary to find something more appropriate. So I went in March 1997, I went to Beijing. I was hosted in a good hotel, the Friendship Hotel in Beijing, and I tried to find a good location with the help of Professor Zhang of Academia Sinica, the National Research Center of China, who was the chair of the organizing committee of a conference. We look at some possible places, but we find nothing good. But one day, looking at the rooms in the Friendship Hotel, I saw that they had large rooms which can be used, or as they are, or subdivided for the conference. So we were able to find about 11, 12 lecture rooms. So we had an agreement with the Friendship Hotel, and this was chosen as the location for the IFOS 1999 conference in Beijing. And so this is my first involvement in the IFOS structures. Then, during the IFOS conference in Beijing in June 1999, on a Sunday afternoon, before the meeting of the representative of the OAS Society in IFOS, in the garden of the hotel, I met again Peter Bell, who was at the time president of IFOS. And he asked me, "Would you like to be the next president of IFOS?" I said again, "Yes." And so in the meeting of a representative of the National Society, they appointed me as president of IFOS for the next 3 years, from January 2001 to December 2003. And so it was IFOS president for 3 years. But was always with meetings with Peter Bell, which can be considered as random meetings, something which is not well defined before. I don't know. I think that Peter thought a lot before to propose me to be chair of program committee or to be president. But it seemed to me that they were in some way natural. Occasional. So good luck for me. And he was glad to work inside IFOS, and it was period as well.
Yeah. You also have problems in saying no, as far as I'm concerned.
Generally, yes, I say, when someone asks me for be involved in some new activities, I generally said yes. Only a few times I said no.
Yeah.
So I don't like people who ask, generally, as a resistance to say yes, but say, "Oh, no, maybe I have to think about this." And after 1 week, they say, "No, okay, I don't like this type of people. I would like someone who would," because it can be too fast to give an answer of this type. But I think that just a bit of enthusiasm in doing the things is a good thing.
Yes. So you prefer one to be objective? And
yes.
Yeah. Okay. So in 2003, you got the honorary doctorate degree from the Université de Montréal, and Angel Bellaport was the promoter. You guys know each other forever, but it took a very long time for you to write a paper together.
Yes, sure. I met Gilbert for the first time in 1978 in Amsterdam for the second Euro conference. And after then, we met several times. I went to visit Gilbert in Montreal. He came to Bologna to visit me. He also gave short courses at my university. So we had good contacts. Also, the wife of Gilbert, Anne, my wife, Louisa, we have good contacts between them. And so, but we never wrote a paper together. Mm-hmm. We finally were able to have this paper published recently in 2022. It was a short note in some way on the right computation of a percentage gap to be considered in the computational result, because Gilbert noted that not a clear rule how to define the percentage gap presented in the tables in the computational result. So we thought about this problem with not clear definition of the percentage gap, and we arrived to write the short paper, which was published in the journal 4OR in 2010, so very recently.
Yeah, I know that work, and when I saw it for the first time, I smiled. So even up to this point, it's still necessary to clarify something that was supposed to be widely known. But yeah, and you mentioned your wife. I had the chance to meet her in Santiago now, she played a very important role in your life, correct?
Yes, really. She is, yes, the most important thing I did, the best thing I did in my wife is to marry my wife, Luisa. So we have 3 children. We have 7 grandchildren. We are both happy of our family, and which is the most important thing in our life, family, and then work, and then pleasure, and maybe then Inter, but not in the first position, of course. And Luisa, yes, she teaches mathematics at the secondary school in Bologna, and now, of course, she's retired, and from the period in which she's no more working at the school, generally, she's able to attend the conferences with me, and this is the nice thing for me. So she's also well known in the IFORS conferences, in the Euro conferences. We attended many conferences, maybe more conferences than many of the participants of the conference. And it's a very important thing for me to have Luisa as my wife.
Yeah. That's beautiful for you to say, Paulo. And you were turning 82 this year. That makes you the oldest subject to guest so far. And how do you find the energy and motivation to stay professionally active?
Yes. The fact is that I really love my research activity. So I try to continue to work on new problems, on new methods with my colleagues and my PhD students. It is important for me to be in contact with young researchers and to meet old friends at the conferences. Egon Balas, with his long, high-level research activity, is for me an example to be followed. So, I don't know if I will be able to have a so long activity as Egon had, but I try to do this. Up to now, I feel well, so I continue to work, and we don't know how it will occur in the next years.
Yeah, I'm sure you're going to stay active for a while. I must say that the combination of your competence and kindness makes you unique. Paulo, and you are a very inspiring person, not only when it comes to doing research in a very high standard, but also the way you act, your generosity, and I think that's highly influential. And from the people that I've spoke with, that those that interacted with you, they all love you and they all have tremendous respect. And you should be really proud for what you achieved. And for me personally, it's really a treat. It's really a pleasure and honor to have this conversation with you. I had, you know, so much fun, and it's a joy, Paulo. Really, thank you so much. Grazie mille.
Yes, thank you very much again, Anand, for your nice words. I enjoyed this conversation, and yes, thank you very much.
Yes. So, Paulo, I'm really looking forward to meeting you soon again. I wish you stay active in the coming years, and I wish you all the best. Take care of your health, and say hi to Luisa, of course.
Thank you very much, Anand. Many thanks.
Yeah.
Grazie mille.
Okay, so
obrigado.
De nada. Take care. Ciao, Paulo. Bye.
Ciao, Anand. Bye.